coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is Cole Houston. This is Hey Kids Comics.
We're not gonna beat.
Wow, we're not beating around the bush tonight because we got a jam-packed show for you. We're talking all night about Black Turtlenecks.
This is a hard-hitting show.
Just Black Turtlenecks all night long. No, you found us at the second issue of a of our story arc. What's the story arc called, Cole? Cole.
This is Cinephiles. And we are talking all about comic book cinema.
That's right. For last issue, we kind of talked about the good, the bad, and the ugly of what's out there. And tonight is an inspired issue, because I don't think we've ever done this, where Cole had the idea to go, not go all the way back, not jump in Mr. Peabody's Wayback Machine and go all the way back, but start in the 80s and kind of
look
at...
Well, Chapman, tonight we're going to talk about Batman. We're
going
to go back and prevent the murder of the Waynes and see what happens.
Okay. Oh, speaking of, I was at work and one of my coworkers, one of my young Padawan coworkers, posited to me as canon the Batman Joker fan theory, where Batman—it's basically Looper, where Batman keeps going back in time and coming, you know, coming forward in time to make sure that he kills the Wayne, so that there is a Batman to stop Apocalypse, or not Apocalypse, Darkseid, and it's just a constant, you know, infinite loop of, and I'm just like, I can't do this with you, man. Like, you're great and all, but this is not where it's at. But yeah, no, I'm excited for tonight because we get to talk about turtleneck. That's for one of our fans.
I think
fans.
There's a turtleneck involved.
Well, that's for one of our fans that we made a Twitter post, and he decided to respond with the word turtleneck over and over again, so I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So how do you want to play this, Cole? How do you want to swing this?
I'm going to swing this from a bat line, depending from a batarang.
The how much do you weigh line?
Step right up, I'll guess your weight.
My name is Mr. Batman. I didn't buy, own, and operate 17 Taco Bells in the greater Gotham area, so you could call me.
I'll guess your weight. Step right up and win some crap.
Today, as we record this, I just want to put this into the world. I'm not looking for anything back in return, but it's a good day to be recording this, because today, as we record this, I have turned 40 years old today. So your host is 40 as of today. So it's a good day to talk about Batman, who has always been an aging superhero trying to fight with the young kids, outsiders, anyone. So yeah, let's go ahead. And the reason that's
well, you're now officially as old as one of the most favored things in the Jedi Cole universe, and that is, of course, the Star Wars.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, is don't forget, the first movie I ever saw was Star Wars. One of the first movies I remember seeing was Batman 1989, which is why it's important that this was a, for me, if we're going to start where we're going to start, and we're going to start with, in my personal opinion, the best on-screen Batman that they've ever had, nostalgia notwithstanding, still holds up, by the way, if you go back and watch it now. Absolutely holds up. Adam West's Batman 66 movie holds up. Cole and I went. Were you there, Cole? We went, right? Did you go?
I think. I did not go to that.
To the Alamo Draft House, and we went and saw Batman 66 at the Alamo. And that was fan. You went to that with me, didn't you?
I did
you?
Go to that, yes. Good Lord, what's wrong with me?
We're getting old. You know, that movie still holds up for what it is. 89 absolutely holds up. I think 89 holds up better than any of the movies leading up to this new one. Even Batman Begins, I don't think, holds up as well as 89. There's just something about what Tim Burton did that almost makes it timeless. It's not tied to anything.
I think in many ways, and we'll get into this a little later, I think that Burton's Batman succeeds because of the world in which it takes place. And I will extrapolate on that after a while.
Okay. So let's start, because you wanted to start around the 1989 Batman movie. You
know, absolutely. Yeah, we may as well just jump right in.
Yeah, let's go for it.
So before we get to that, I have to just give mad props to Joel Schumacher. No. That is...
No.
Joel Schumacher was my favorite Batman director.
Good God. This is how I become the Batman. And I hunt you down as the Joker.
That's right. Everybody loves Schumacher. But seriously, that Batman, Burton's Batman, you know, it's in many ways one of the least Burton-esque films.
Yeah, yeah.
While simultaneously being very much having the mark of a Burton film. Mm-hmm. And I think that was literally the best way to bring a modern audience into Batman, was to approach the character in a world that anything's possible. Because if you start in this over-the-top, I think the largest exterior location in decades at the time,
mm-hmm.
You know, like Cleopatra-esque 17-acre Gotham City.
Like old MGM lots,
Yeah, and you have this architecture and this feel of this Gotham that, you know, it's just, do you not have zoning?
They have bigger fish to fry in Gotham than zoning.
Pride or, yeah, you know, anything. So it's, you know, little wonder the dad at the beginning of the movie doesn't want Jimmy to make him look like tourists, because Gotham City has no tourists.
Right. That's a surefire way to,
You're an easy mark if you're a tourist, because they're so infrequent. You know, it's like police vying to get the big collar. You know, it's just, everybody shows up for that arrest. So you create very subtly this world that allows Batman to exist, that allows Jack Napier to get dropped into a vat of chemicals.
Right.
And come out, you know, well bleached. Green.
Well bleached.
Jack looked like he was he visited the Gotham tanning salon, because that was the closest to the sun anyone ever got in Gotham, unless they went up on the roof.
That's true.
It was like freaking Coruscant. They're like down in the catacombs at street level.
It's Blade Runner-esque at that point.
Yeah, really.
It's Ridley Scott-esque there. It's why you know something bad's going to happen anytime you see the sun in a Ridley Scott movie.
Exactly. Oddly enough, J.F. Sebastian was halfway to a Batman rogues gallery.
Well, that's true. That's true. That actually, I think
friends
you could,
and boys, they asked me to murder you. What?
You could drop like a later version, like maybe a Batman 2099 or a Dark Knight or a Dark Knight Returns Batman directly into Blade Runner.
That's
and
so
you'd
true.
Be fine. You'd be absolutely fine. You have a pre-built rogues gallery. You have a mystery to solve. You have
you got Roy Batty, man.
I mean, that's Roy Batty's the Joker. Like, I remember.
No, you know, he's Roy Batty, man.
Oh. Man, I remember seeing Blade Runner.
Well, the worst part was I had to repeat that.
I didn't. I was trying to steamroll you, and you just wouldn't go down. Cole.
It's like Judge Doom and Roger Rabbit. I just bounce right back up.
Like, damn it!
I finger inflated myself.
no, never, ever again use the term finger inflated yourself.
Sorry, I meant Bill Finger inflated myself.
Because it took me a second.
As seen on BillFingerBang.com.
It took me a while to realize you said finger inflated and not finger filleted yourself. Gross.
Both of them have happened.
you can't have one without the other. It's love and marriage.
Pretty much.
But after watching Blade Runner, I remember thinking that Rutger Hauer would have made a really good Joker if they would have made an early 80s Batman movie. But when I say, I have criteria that I judge film Batman on, right? There are four criteria. One is how well they do as Batman. Number two is how well they do as Bruce Wayne, which I think is the hardest one to get right.
Absolutely.
Number three is Gotham itself. What does Gotham look like, and what are they doing with Gotham City? Because as we've talked about in our geography episodes and other Batman episodes, you know, Gotham is a character unto itself. You know, it's Chinatown of the DC universe. And then fourth, how well does that actor wear a black turtleneck? So the three,
all very important criteria,
and then
of course.
The one. Yeah, for sure. But I there's just something about Michael Keaton that makes it, and you take it to almost the brink of theater of the bizarre, like almost beyond the pale, almost Schumacher-esque, close. But they just stay just on this side of it. I think that he does a great job as Batman. We didn't need this idea that he had to have the stupid voice yet. Like,
yeah.
He changed his voice a little bit, but it wasn't like the Christian Bale, Ben Affleck.
I couldn't possibly be Bruce Wayne.
Have you heard my voice?
Bruce Wayne has a gravelly voice. I have a gravelly voice. Bruce Wayne has a Lamborghini, and I've got a Batmobile. So there, end of story. Leave me alone.
We can't be the same guy.
Look, there's Bruce Wayne.
So I also want to say this at the top.
Just explode the powder so no one will know who they are.
It's just Liam Neeson showing up everywhere. It's just pop-up video, Liam Neeson.
I thought you were dead.
Liam Neeson is to the Batman universe what everybody in a Ghost Hunter show is to that Ghost Hunter show. Yeah, that's right. But I want to say this, because I was really thinking about this when I was doing the research and as we were getting ready to do this, Cole, and I want to know what you think about this. Of all the superheroes out there that they've made movies out of, Marvel side, DC side, anything, Batman is the most ridiculous. I love Batman. Batman works really, really well in comic books. In movies, it's a ludicrous idea that this guy, Batman, right, can run around the city at night and be Bruce Wayne during the day, and no one has figured it out yet. I know that that's been harped on for a million years.
Oh, yeah, every Bat fan will harp on that because it is the core tenet of Batman lore that you have to forgive or you have no Batman. It's sort of like I don't even know if this is an actual workable corollary or not, but it's kind of like a Schrodinger's cat. Schrodinger's bat, if you will.
Schrodinger's bat. Rename the episode Schrodinger's bat.
Schrodinger's bat. But, yeah, I mean, it's such a tremendously ridiculous notion because it posits the idea that Bruce Wayne is an insomniac on a, you know, clinically detrimental level.
Right.
Because otherwise it can't possibly work, the entire concept of Batman. Because Bruce Wayne, as an important captain of industry, is rather compelled to have a day job or, you know, at least have a presence in the daytime world.
Right.
And then he spends 9 or 10 hours at night. It becomes a day in Gotham City becomes like watching Napoleon Dynamite. So you can't really tell, did that take place over the course of 3 days or 7 months? Or there's no real sense of time. Like one scene there at the school, 3 minutes later, they're, you know, so they're in town shopping, and then they're back at school. What the hell?
But my, okay, so like,
guys, like, show up when you want to.
Even in the 90s, right? I will give you up to 89 that Batman could exist. You know, guys in pork pie hats with having to change the flash in their cameras couldn't necessarily, without some Woodward and Bernstein level shit, figure out who that is. Now, I don't know, whoever, name your C-list celebrity that can't come out of a restaurant in L.A. without some paparazzi literally following them home. And don't give me this Superman Clark Kent argument. Well, you know, Clark Kent and Superman get a, yeah, he's super fast. He can fly on his own.
Like, excuse himself at dinner, duck into the restroom, fly from Metropolis to Buenos Aires, avert a major disaster, or, you know, capture a stray parademon or something for reasons, and be back in time to have reasonably taken a piss.
Right. Batman can't do that.
But
in
the best
comics,
part is, on the way back, he can piss.
Just do it. Just do it. It's going to kill someone. It's
oh, yeah.
Somebody's going to die over...
Well, it's what they call the yellow hail.
God damn it.
It's mysterious, like something you would hear about on Figments or something.
Have you heard about the yellow hail?
Yeah.
No, but in comics, I'll give it to you because you can go panel to panel, right? Like, Batman can save the day and then wake up in the morning with Alfred like, oh, I've got French toast and a new puppy, and then, oh, God, I got to get to the boardroom. In the movies, you're forced to believe when you swoop down from a rooftop and save somebody from a car, you know, a car running into them at 10 o'clock at night downtown Gotham City, where there are probably no fewer than 400 people within eyeshot of you, that somebody is going to be like, I'm going to follow that person home, or they're going to start like Twitter geotagging you all the way there. I saw him at this street. I saw him at this street. I saw him turn off on this.
Oh,
road.
Yeah. There'd be like these maps of Gotham City, greater Gotham, that are so crisscrossed with string that it begins to look like some sort of 70s like string art. It's Gotham. Where? I can't. All I see is like yellow, pink, blue.
It's a parrot. No, it's Gotham.
Yeah. Well, if you relax your eyes, it is.
So that just gave me a great idea, Cole. Have you watched very many YouTube conspiracy videos in your life?
No, I haven't, but I know someone who probably has.
Right? I think Eddie needs to make a fake Figments Batman is Bruce Wayne YouTube video, like with the red circles where you're circling, like, in this picture, you can see that Batman is wearing this, you know, he has a bruise on this pinky, and then in this picture, you see the bruise on, like really bad. So, Eddie, if you're listening to this, get on that. But we digress hardcore. So let's go back to Batman 1989.
Absolutely. I want to address the Wayne criteria, because I think that the Wayne situation is one that often gets overlooked, but it's vitally important to the fans in the long run. And like you said, can you give us a good Bruce Wayne? I'm going to say that probably the least Bruce Wayne-y of all the Bruce Waynes, Val Kilmer.
Really?
He just didn't.
See, for me, the least Bruce Wayne-y was Christian Bale. I know that that's not a popular sentiment.
No, it isn't, because Christian Bale, I think partly it's two things. It's the way they present certain aspects of him having the necessity of being Bruce Wayne. And one of the most brilliant uses of that was Alfred's admonition of how one is a billionaire playboy.
Yeah.
I absolutely love the line, buy things that aren't for sale.
It is a good line. It is a really good line.
That is, someone had articulated something I never knew I needed articulating until that moment. And the other thing is, one of my favorite scenes in The Dark Knight is when Bruce becomes obsessed with Lucius Fox's new business cards. It's just over the top. Oh, wait.
Nice. No, but it's so cool. But here's my rub, right? It's a lot of these people play Bruce Wayne as an... I think Michael Keaton came the closest because it shows the dichotomy. He wasn't acting as Bruce Wayne. It was like two individual people. So,
yeah.
So with a... You know, which is what I think Moon Knight does really well, is it's these two disparate personalities with this
one meeting, you're Watchmen.
One meeting in the middle, you know, where almost like a handing of the baton when the sun goes down. You know what I mean? Like, oh, well, it's your turn. All right, you get to wear the body now.
It's almost like, you know, the whole Wile E. Coyote and the sheepdog.
I think...
You see Bruce Wayne dragging in and clocking.
Right.
Punching the clock.
I think the problem with that you might have with Val Kilmer is that
Val Kilmer.
Well, hey, easy. Val Kilmer is, is a vaunted actor around here. If you, I think he was too much Bruce Wayne and not enough Batman. I think that's the Val Kilmer problem. Was I think he played the playboy, the kind of brash arrogance of that really well, but just wasn't Batman enough. I don't know, maybe.
I can see where you're going from there. Yeah, and in all honesty, it's been a long-ass time since I've seen that movie.
But the best Bruce Wayne.
Oh.
Separating the Batman portion. If I was just going for a Bruce Wayne movie, period, George Clooney. 110%.
I loved... The only thing I actually loved about the Schumacher Batmans was the casting of George Clooney. Mm-hmm. Because he was, like you say, I wouldn't say he's my best Bruce Wayne, and I'll explore that in a moment, but I think he really was, in costume, he looks more like Batman than Batman. And out of costume, he is an incredible Bruce Wayne. And he did plays both beautifully, up to the point that he's in that particular movie with that particular plot and that other particular movie with that other particular plot.
I'll agree with that. I'll say
it just is this amazing. It is the Batman we truly deserve. And then it runs headlong into this invisible wall called the Joel Schumacher concept.
the Joel Schumacher's writing room. It just gets put into the meat grinder.
Oh, God. To say the least. But, I mean, literally, I loved... A lot of people just were like, George Clooney. I'm like, have you seen them in costume? That is the living, physical embodiment of everything we've ever imagined Batman would look like in the flesh.
See, if you remove...
If we are me.
If you remove Keaton from the equation, which you almost – Keaton is like name your supercar that you know you can never buy, right? And you're like, well, I need to buy a car. I'm obviously not going to buy that car because I don't have the money for that. For me, that's what Keaton is. Keaton's almost removed from the equation for Batman. If I could have – and I'm going to say this, and this is good – again – this isn't the most popular of ideas, but if I could have Affleck as Batman, because I think he does a great job at looking like Batman, because my problem with all of the Batman is they're too small. Batman's supposed to be like 6'5 and just a beast of a man.
I mean, even in the Frankenstein Risers, Keaton still came up about foot and a half too short.
Right. Even
looking like incredibly mean.
No, he looked like a lead singer for The Cure or something with like giant creepers on. Like, it was Tim Burton. That's the reason he had to wear them. I've got these out of my closet. You're like, God damn it, Tim. But if you could give me
Clooney, design the whole costume around them.
If you could give me Clooney as Wayne and Affleck as Batman, I'd be a happy guy. Like, Clooney was so... A matter of fact, I would go as far as to say I would like to see a Batman movie that's about Bruce Wayne. Because we've gotten all of these Batman movies, But what happens during the day? Like boardrooms? Because when you live in the DC universe, you have to be rubbing shoulders with the Al Ghuls or the Luthers or the Hives or the whoever, you know, in business dealings. So I want to see like either a comic book like an Ed Brubaker, like Batman boardroom comic book, or like a Aaron Sorkin Wayne Industries TV show a la like The West Wing. That was what I would want to see. Okay, I'm sorry. I love talking about Michael Keaton. I'm sorry. I'm off my soapbox now.
I don't blame you. Well, the thing is, I recall, and I'm sure you do as well, because by the time the Keaton Batman was, you know, we're finally getting a movie Batman. And when Michael Keaton's casting was announced.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Thank God the internet had yet to be invented. Because, you know, we decry the internet troll today. Apparently we were trolling even before there was an internet. We just had to, like, write to the editor of the newspaper or something, and word would get spread on the evening news. But, oh, dear Lord, amongst the, you know, just you over the fence.
People losing their minds.
It was just the, you know, why have... How can you give us the pinnacle of Joker and Mr. Mom? And it was just...
There was a lot of Mr. Mom. There was a lot of gung-ho. Yeah.
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 And I think I was... It took me a while to soften on, you know, Keaton as Batman. And once I saw it, I was pretty impressed. And I think what really impresses me the most about Keaton as Batman... You talk about having a Bruce Wayne Batman movie. Batman was nearly a Bruce Wayne Batman movie, because you see more Bruce Wayne than you do Batman, because of that sort of old Hollywood, if I pay a guy $100 for being in a movie, I want to see his mug. That was still prevalent.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very hard for Hollywood to let him put on the cowl.
You're right.
And as a result, I think you get some great Bruce Wayne moments, like the confrontation with Max Schreck, where he chucks the independent report on the power station across the entire boardroom. That massive Dr. Strangelove.
It's somehow, because you make a really, it is a very Dr. Strangelove moment, somehow, because of that, right? Because you don't want to have the, you know, him in the mask 51% of the time. You want to have, you know, Bruce Wayne on screen 51% of the time and Batman 49%. You get, oddly, one of the most grounded Tim Burton movies out of a Batman movie starring Jack Nicholson as the Joker with Bob the Goon and Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton, the one caffeine pill away from Nick Cage in a lot of these scenes. just want to get nuts. Let's get nuts. Just
and you occasionally have to go see what the Joker's up to, so it could be a Tim Burton movie again. This town needs an enema.
Right. So it stops being a Rob Reiner flick and goes back to being a Tim Burton movie. I love it so much, and I think that's why I do. Not to mention there's a nostalgic movie that holds up over time, has a very special place.
Pick it up and watch it. I mean, even though at times the the cinematography is there. There are times when Gotham City's a little too well lit.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you know, the darker scenes aren't noir enough. But it's what I loved is I love when there's some sort of reverence paid to what's come before. And what is wonderful, and I think very subtly done, is the brilliant nods to 66 Batman.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people are like, what? But look at the slightly – if you look, the Joker scenes are a little askew, which is normally bad, bad cinematography.
Right.
And one of my favorite things is once they take over Axis Chemical as their headquarters, they're like draping, you know, reams and reams of cloth you know, purples and satiny colors and you know, bringing in these it becomes very much like all of the Batman villain headquarters, which were just, you know, a bunch of shit, a bunch of tapestries hung up so you didn't see it was just another studio.
Another soundstage somewhere.
Yeah,
right?
Another soundstage space.
But yeah, and if you watch, obviously, and it was, and there was a lot of it that was because of the fact that there wasn't a lot of, you could go back and watch to get an idea of what your character was. But if you go back and you watch, like, Jack Nicholson as the Joker, a lot of his animatics, a lot of his movements, a lot of his blocking was very Cesar Romero. When he's in the museum, he does a thing where instead of walking, he does the jump start like a Cary Grant, like he's beginning his dance that Cesar Romero used to do all the time in 66, where you know, it's the kind of hippity boop, the 1-2-1.
Exactly. They gave us the very theatrical Joker.
Right.
Like he comes up to the sculpture of the ballerina. And...
Yes, yes. But we digress.
And also, to go back to the Tim Burton verse where this takes place that allows Batman to be workable, the Flugelheim Museum.
Yes.
Number one is the most god-awful looking. It was like maybe the Flugelheims died and left some abattoir or something. With the mandate that the city had to use it for higher purpose, like an art museum.
Right.
The curator of the Flugelheim, rather, should be put against the wall and shot. That is the most, I mean, there is zero flow. They apparently have, the Flugelheim owns no art of its own because it's obviously borrowed from 50 different galleries and museums across the world.
Right.
They have a Degas. They they have a Cezanne. They have a... Oh, God. I'm like, who is that? The one that he doesn't want destroyed. And then they have, like, for some reason, the presidential portrait is on loan to Gotham City.
You're not wrong.
That would be like Trump saying, well, we're going to loan out the Lincoln portrait to Chicago.
Why?
Number one in murder, according to Trump.
Oh, my God.
The whole museum is unworkable because it's just, you know, it's like a kid. What was that one painting? And then there's that other, you know, the one with the ballerinas. And then what else is there? And it's like, no, that's not how museums work. They don't just throw 75 different styles and higgledy-piggledy through them.
Anywhere they...
And they put, like, you know, works of art that are literally priceless. There is no... It's unfathomable what their value. It's inestimable.
Right.
And they put them in their tiny cafe. Like if somebody suddenly had a really big sneeze, they could get spaghetti sauce or all over it, or tiramisu or whatever the hell that one lady was eating.
It did border, some of those scenes did border on Duran Duran music video. I will tell you, some of those scenes were hungry like the wolf. That's just a fact. But I think a lot of that does, I mean, you can watch it. It does have its moments where it feels a little dated. Let's just be honest. But
oh, absolutely. But at the same time, like you said, it holds up nicely over time. It has a remarkable shelf life. I think, you know, it's just because it was packed with preservatives, because that's the way we used to make movies back then.
It's MSG.
That's right. So let's, you know, because only your Undertaker knows for sure. We'll just move on to other things, because we could talk about the Keaton Batman.
Oh, yeah. But there are other Batman movies.
We could talk about Batman forever.
I could talk about Fudge all day, Cole. No, so...
And of course, you know, Batman Returns along with Tim Burton.
Yeah.
And Michael Keaton. And we get a much... I'd have to really compare the two side by side, but I think you see Hollywood softening on the cowl.
Oh, there's a lot more cowl in Batman Returns. Oh. And a lot more of... well, you've got the Edward Scissorhands effect in the sense that you've got Danny DeVito in makeup the entire time.
Yeah.
In prosthetics and makeup the entire time. But then you've also got Michelle Pfeiffer spends a great deal of time in her patchwork Catwoman outfit. So
that's true.
You've really kind of, I think, accepted the fact that you're going to get Batman in a suit, you're going to get supervillains, or at least the Rogues Gallery, in one way or another, in costume. So accept it. You know, that we realized we can do this and make money on it. People were saying they wanted more Batman, less Bruce Wayne. Let's give them that.
And they give us the Penguin that we never knew we wanted.
Right.
And now it's the only Penguin we want.
It's the only Penguin the only Penguin that we imagine when we think of the Penguin, short of Burgess Meredith.
Yes. Well, and what's amazing about the Burton Penguin is it insinuates itself onto the DC Universe.
Yes. Yes.
His French flipper trick hands, which he basically invented the technique that would later be used by Crab Boy in American Horror Story.
Damn it.
Let that one sink in. Because literally,
I'm not letting it sink in.
It sank right in. But you get the flipper hand first becomes, you know, help it informs the animated series Penguin.
Oh, absolutely.
And I don't, did it ever, did Oswald ever lose his digits, or did he continue to have five fingers and eight toes?
I think there have been different iterations of the way that his hands look. I don't think they ever went full flipper hands.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever went full flipper hands. I think that they stayed kind of within the bounds and reaches of human physiognomy. But
hey, so he still had people hands, in other words.
But I mean, they did not shy away from making him pretty grotesque in the comic books after this movie came out. Because before, he was just a... He was more or less just a villain, a rich villain.
Oh, yeah. As Bob Kane himself described him, he's a dapper little fellow.
Yeah.
You know, he had the throat warbler Mangrove from Monty Python Schnoz, but that was about it. And he dressed well on a constant. I mean, it was just embarrassing.
Yeah, that was his shtick.
Yeah.
But in the after this movie came out, he definitely got shorter and more grotesque, and his nose got longer, and he became more of a monster than what...
Yeah, he got those D. Schneider teeth and the...
Right. But yeah, and also Catwoman being introduced here was a pretty interesting take as well, the way that they did that. I think that I liked it. I think that they did a really good job with it. I think that this movie missed a huge beat, though. Do you want to guess what that beat is?
I pretty much spent all my mental energy on making stupid reference jokes. So.
The missed beat here is that we were introduced to Harvey Dent.
Oh, God, yes.
In the film.
And I was...
Go ahead, because I'm excited too.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, it was in Batman, you get, I thought, some of the best casting. Probably one of the earliest where we're casting against the traditional comic book.
Yeah.
As we often say, comics was a box of crackers.
Yeah.
But this was one where it wasn't just, let's cast an African-American actor. Let's cast a great African-American actor, and an African-American actor who is famous for being pretty.
Yes.
Because I think that this is where Schumacher and company, his casting director went grossly wrong. Performance-wise, I love Tommy Lee Jones. I think he's one of the finest actors America's ever produced, unless he's one of those damn Canadian actors like so many of them turn out to be. But no, I think he's from Texas. But anyway,
South Canada. South That's what we
Canada.
Call it.
Way South Canada.
Yeah.
Well, it is America's hat. But so they missed the beat there. That to me, what was brilliant about casting Tommy Lee Calrissian.
Yeah, I want to call him Lando. He only has one name for me. I'm sorry. I mean, that's awful, but I can't help it.
Billy Dee versus Tommy Lee it's a no-brainer because, to me, that brilliantly suggested that somebody was thinking that part of the psychosis of Two-Face is going from being very gorgeously handsome to being hideously disfigured with a constant reminder that depending on, you know, which profile you're looking at.
Right.
You know, you're going from Mel Gibson to Mel Torme.
Wow.
To steal something that Steve Martin did years ago.
But the miss for, when I say miss, I do not mean Billy Dee Williams being cast. What I do mean is them never being able to follow through with making him into
Two-Face. Oh, no, exactly. I thought that's where we were headed.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't want you to think that I'm saying that he
was
a bad cast.
Oh, no, I knew exactly where you were headed, and that's why I jumped all over that, because that was brilliant casting that never went anywhere.
And also, I think that the problem I have with – I'm okay with – since we're slowly moving into the later Batman movies, the Batman Forever type movies, I'm – And Batman Returns. I'm okay with the Riddler being a little over the top. Okay.
Oh no, I think absolutely the Riddler needs to be a little over the top. I love the fan art with David Tennant as the Riddler that got everybody all gaga.
But for my money, Harvey Dent should never have been what Tommy Lee Jones was directed to do with Two-Face.
Yeah.
Like that. God, it's
people stopped wishing they were Two-Face.
Right, for a while, people stopped wishing this. So let's move into where are we? Are we on Batman Forever? I think we're on Batman Forever. Let's just talk a little bit about Batman Forever because that's where you start getting into.
I think there was that Burton opened the door to Anything Goes.
Right,
but Burton had this wonderful sense of dark comedy. That he could do ridiculous things. Like one of my favorite scenes, and here we're going right back to it, but where, you know, Penguin has his rack of umbrellas, and as he's slowly meeting his end, he yanks out this one, the one that he used to illustrate the luring the firstborn hoi polloi.
Oh, yes, yes.
And it's just brilliant in the line, I picked a cute one. Schumacher took that, and we see it through a magnifying lens. This is like a 50 power, and the studio lights refracted through that lens and burned up everything that was great and remade it into this sort of glossy ultraviolet neon.
Oh, the neon. Don't.
Well, that and what was it, like Blacklight Alley?
Oh, no. That was the. But Blacklight Alley was the next one.
I was in
the
Spelunker cave.
Yeah, that's Batman and Robin. That was Batman and Robin.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That's the next one.
I had it myself, but yeah.
Oof.
But you introduce a color palette of neon and laser and, things that don't belong.
Well, I think there was a lot of because they cans, right? When you were doing 89 and what, 91, I think, for 92 for Batman Returns, the leap between – there was a lot of – Like the Batman Forever, and especially in Batman and Robin, was the Spencer Gifts of Batman movies. It was all smoke machines, black lights.
That's right.
The Riddler shit with his Riddler box that was broadcasting out to, like, that was absolutely, and they'll go on record as saying that these are more homage to the 66 show than Tim Burton ever did. Like, yeah. With the tight shots, like the super tight shots of, like the Riddler when he's sitting there, or super tight shots of all of, you know, that those things are very much filming homages to the, yeah, to the 66.
And the, you know, it's just, I think it becomes an uncomfortable encore following, you know. It's like, you know, back in the 40s, the cartoon came before the film. And
good point.
That's really, I think, the reason that it doesn't play, it does not hold up. It's neither of the Schumacher films are ones I'm keen to see. And I remember in, I think, Toy Fair magazine or one of the toy magazines about, God, nearly 20 years ago now, had a picture of Joel Schumacher at the actual New York City Toy Fair goofing off with some Batman toys. And they referred to him as Franchise Destroyer, Joel Schumacher.
Franchise Destroyer. That's horrible.
It's horrible, but true. It was just everything we wanted. And in many ways, and this will become something more specifically attached to the next episode, but in many ways you have this sort of sensation of early Marvel. You have this sort of, I don't know, it just a little too over the top, a little too bright, a little too not quite getting it.
Yeah.
Too much for laughs, and it worked well enough that lo and behold, we get another outing with Schumacher.
Well, I remember going to see the Clooney Batman movie in the theater and coming out and just going, what the hell did I just watch? Like, that was a nail in the coffin for a while. You had to let that go for a while because you just couldn't. After the Mr. Freeze, after the Bane Poison Ivy, after who else was in that monstrosity?
And that kind of jogged my memory where I was headed with that was that that Bane kind of to me when Venom becomes the studio mandate, it's very much like Bane.
Right.
Because that's the sexy, current, hot in the comics character. So we have to do that. And it's sort of like, no, you don't. Just because, you know, Eternity and Malcolm, just because you can doesn't mean you should. So this is what you get when you have this roided up wrestler who's been spray painted with hideous veins and they put him in a gorilla suit that was repurposed from the teddy bears from the Avengers. I'm not talking about Marvel's Avengers.
Right. You're talking about the Avengers. You're talking Emma Peel's the Avengers.
Yeah. It's like the WTF brown cow.
I forgot. Oh God, this movie, I can't talk about this movie much longer. I forgot that he whips out that Batman Forever credit card in this movie.
Oh good Lord, I'd somehow let that one slip by me as well.
How
you are the devil for bringing that back.
I forgot that happened, and it's really uncomfortable. This movie makes me uncomfortable. because I'm a Batman fan, this movie makes me uncomfortable. It's the there's something about the fact that they that the characters that they're using, and the costume design and all that was really close to the origins of those characters, and they never let them evolve. Like Poison Ivy in 1995 or 1997 or whenever this seven should never have looked the way that Poison Ivy looked in this.
Yeah.
And Bane should never have looked the way Bane looked in this. And
for some reason, the costume designer wanted to have, like, you know, Poison Ivy of the Four Seasons or something.
Right?
Like, oh, this is my autumn look.
Like, we've got to make Batman and we've got to make Batman and Robin and Batgirl tactical for some reason. And then make everybody else give them this, the worst, goofiest costumes ever. I don't. It bothers.
Well, that and the bizarre. I think with Mr. Freeze, we're halfway to a good idea that became a bad idea.
Right.
And in retrospect, I kind of like the Freeze armor because, in a way, it makes a little more sense than just sort of a containment suit. You would need something that's, you know, just rippling with high tech because it's having to do a lot of stuff.
Heavy lifting, sure.
Yeah, but the wings for the purpose of having an aerial
right
fight scenario. Mr. Freeze and big wings just don't, that doesn't work. I cease to allow this Mr. Freeze to exist. And it also, I think this movie suffers from Schwarzeneggerism.
Oh, it does.
Because this was the period where Schwarzenegger was such the flavor of the year that, you know, it was like the Hollywood's employee of the month or something. Everybody was putting Schwarzenegger in everything, whether it got made or not.
Right.
And this is the period where you had bandied about Arnold Schwarzenegger as DC Comics' number one all-American fighting man with a damned near German accent. And I remember telling people, I don't really have a dog in the fight because I'm only have a passing familiarity with the character, but I have enough of a passing familiarity to character to know this is wrong and to know that it's going to be very awkward. It's like, all right, boys, let's go kill these Nazis.
My problem with the Mr. Freeze is that almost every iteration, incarnation of Mr. Freeze.
God, believe me, he's killed like about, huh?
I was just saying that my problem with Freeze is that every iteration that I know of Mr. Freeze has been a very sympathetic character.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And this was not a sympathetic character at all, the furthest thing from it.
Yeah, and then they try to inject some humor that just falls flat because it doesn't belong there.
No, yeah, it's bad.
Like the frozen solid frozen dinners and the... And of course, the whole watching one scene from Rudolph, from one of the Rudolph movies. we switch channels when Mr. Heatmiser comes out? Or?
Oh, God. The less we talk about these movies, the better. But
I think a good palate cleanser is to go on into, of course, The Dark Knight.
But I will say this. I do want to back you up again that Clooney makes a hell of a Bruce Wayne and a not half bad Batman if they wouldn't have put him in a giant armored bat suit. If it would have been closer to one of the current bat suits, I think we would have had one hell of a Batman under the right supervision. But yes, I think that you're right. I think we do need to move on to Batman Begins in my unpopular opinions about Batman Begins.
The thing about Batman Begins, one of the real masterstrokes was the title. And where I'm going with this is that naming this film, Batman Begins, which originally, if I'm not mistaken, the original working title was Batman Intimidation Game.
Was it?
Which saves Intimidation Game as a great title for a future Nolan film, which will be smashing.
I'm sure it will. I'm sure it'll have nothing to do with Batman.
Yeah. No, that was, I think, if I'm not mistaken, look it up, but I believe that that was the original work title.
I like that.
But the name Batman Begins, it in two words, it does everything the title Naked Lunch doesn't. but seriously, though, in two words, you have everything you need. The realization that we're starting over.
Right.
You know, it wasn't Batman, the brand new origin story that helps erase all the bad feelings you've had up to this
point. Oh, my God. I just, I don't know. I have unpopular opinions. I have unpopular opinions. Okay, so I love these movies. They're Batman movies. They're Batman movies that were written and directed and created brilliantly. From the first one to the last one, and as much as you want to poo-poo the last one, it was still a hell of a movie. It was still a really cool movie with some really interesting plot twists. I never thought we would get a Ra's al Ghul in a Batman movie, and they did it very well. And they tried to, you know, they tried to give you that Shyamalan twist in there.
Exactly.
Which I really liked.
The problem is that they're the Ken Watanabe Shyamalan twist, which I believe is where you're headed.
Yes.
Was undermined by merchandising.
Oh, it sure was.
Because they played the hell of it up. And, you know, I would rather have just let that happen.
My problem is how much of these movies' greatness, and I do think that they're great movies, comes from the direction, the writing, the cinematography. The way it's filmed, the surrounding and supporting staff of Liam Neeson playing a criminal mastermind, Ken Watanabe playing his red herring. I realize this movie I forgive. The first one I forgive because Batman is supposed to be beginning. It's in the title, like you said, right? He just never, for my money and for my opinion, for whatever it's worth, he never gets to the point where he's super intimidating as Batman. Does that make sense? Like,
I see where you're headed there.
To me, he never becomes the – there are some points in The Dark Knight where I'm like, all right. But so much of that is just Heath Ledger's blow-the-doors-off-it performance as the Joker, right? It makes that an easy makes for an easy two-hander. But it even into the – you know, the later in this one with the Scarecrow stuff and then into the second one, I just don't get the feeling that he's – in control the way Batman tends to be portrayed to be in control. But that's all I'm going to say about it. Other than that, they're brilliant movies, and I love them. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the theater?
Does not judge.
So where do you want to take this conversation on Batman Begins?
I think we have to explore the fact that it easily could have smacked of a return of the Burton Batman from the standpoint of – you know, you gonna have some Batman in your Batman movie?
When's that gonna happen?
Yeah, I hate that man. But at the same time, it's a necessity. This was actually one of the most approachable. Let's tell a story we all know again.
Right, right.
It's like, no, I know the calls to the babysitter are coming from inside the house. I've only heard this infinity times. But
he had a hook for a hand.
So, you know, it somehow is forgivable.
Because it's done
doing
well.
That.
Because it's done well. That's why it's forgivable.
Because it takes that timeless story and it gives it to you in such a remarkable way. And it also ties it into a principal villain. And it does all of this without having to give you a Joker or a Riddler or a Penguin right off the bat.
Right.
You know, you don't have to have everybody on board right at the beginning. And you get the payoff of Batman having to solve the big mysteries and basically, you know, turn the tables and become the enemy of the teacher. It's like, I didn't really think that one through very well, did I? I've got a certain set of skills, but they sometimes fail me. And you also allow for, you don't have the, this is, I think, also you're starting to lose, well, I can't even say that. There's kind of that loss of innocence that comes and goes in the Nolan films.
Right.
Where Batman would rather rely on the strength of his own two, you know, on his mitts and his batarangs and his carnival gun than, you know, just like taking the Scott Evil approach. Bam! Dead! Yet at the same time, that argument can't hold water, because if you look at Batman Returns, Batman is inside effectively a military ordnance vehicle.
Right.
Being assailed by people who are just like ordinary people chucking stuff at him. And, you know, he's firing like ballistic projectiles at motorcyclists. And while threatening, the fire breather probably isn't going to do anything more than just really mess the paint job. Does that action justify immolating a human being in retaliation? Is that good, effective crime fighting?
Right.
Especially since your victim now stumbles back into the shop he was ransacking and burns it to the ground. So the same thing sort of happens when you sort of get this feel like Batman doesn't kill except when he does.
Sure.
By the time you get to The Dark Knight Rises.
Yes.
Where you have the whole thing with Catwoman, Selina Kyle, or semi-Catwoman, kind of blowing Bane away with the statement about, you know, she doesn't have a big problem with guns the way you do. But at the same time, he doesn't really have a lot of problem with doing a lot of other nasty stuff that's...
Dragging a, you know, like dragging a tanker truck through the streets and whatever else he needs to do, sure.
You know, chucking people off of walls or off of rooftops and stuff.
Right. No, I don't dislike these movies, and I don't think that we should dwell too long on The Dark Knight, because I think that so much has been said and probably so much more eloquently.
I think the two films that we could do an episode on are Batman, the Tim Burton Batman, and The Dark Knight.
Yeah, and I think we have done one on The Dark Knight before.
We probably have. I don't see how we couldn't.
But yeah,
haven't, shame on us.
The Dark Knight Rises, I still thought was pretty good. You know, I still thought it was a good movie. I liked what they did. I made fun of it, and I still will make fun of it, and I made fun of it a lot when it happened. But the whole Bane thing, the way that they had him, you know, with the mask and talking through the mask.
Yeah.
Was funny. Let's be honest. It was funny. But all in all, it was still a pretty good movie, and it was pretty iconic, too.
Because absolutely. But it leaves you with one glaring question. Granted, Gotham City isn't the best place in the world, but it isn't some third world hellhole of abject squalor either.
Right.
How do you turn the people of Gotham, the citizenry of an entire city, against their own infrastructure?
Right.
Much less their politicians and anything else they may disagree with. And I'm not just because no one can understand what he's saying. He becomes like Darth Nader in Hardware Wars. I don't understand what you're saying. Argument doggy. What are you talking to me?
Did you just invoke Hardware Wars?
Of course I did.
Jeez, man. That movie, is that ever even released on DVD?
Yes, it was. They actually did a Hardware Wars special edition where they went in and added extra effects.
Oh, no, like the movies, like when they did the digital.
Further lampoon, like when Artie Deco and 4Q2 have landed on Tatooine, they actually added an unspooling audio cassette as the escape pod, which was the escape pod. But they actually superimposed the giant one, and it's just slowly unspooling as they walk away. But the thing about it is, how the whole Bane gambit is unworkable when your entree into seducing Gotham into following you as their duly as their new ad hoc leader and isolationist king is to blow up the local sports venue, swallowing whole not only the hated rival team. But there's the quarterback who goes on the weekends to the children's hospitals, and that one guy that nobody really likes, but boy, he can run, and they're all dead now.
Right.
And if you blow it up and then you got a bunch of geeks at the Comic-Con, they'd be like, oh yeah, we'll follow you to the gates of hell. But if you're right there at the stadium where you just committed mass murder, it's like, oh, by the way, I'm going to follow me. We're going to just take over this town. What do you think, guys?
Let's do it.
Just witnessed an atrocity on a level that people outside the military don't normally get to see, for some of them within arm's length. I mean, Scoopy the Water Boy, he's gone. He's dead. He's like crushed under a disembodied gridiron there. And it becomes an unworkable thing. It's almost Zack Snyder-esque.
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing the tipping point of Batman at this point.
Yeah.
They were trying to shoehorn in 3 or 4 storylines into one.
It seems an inevitability. Why do we have to keep doing this?
Everybody just wants a Batman movie. A single arc, 5-issue, comic book Batman movie. Not a, because what they did was they did the, what was the name of the Gotham,
I know where you're headed there.
Where they quarantine Gotham and then everybody.
Contagion?
No, it wasn't Contagion. They quarantined Gotham, and then everybody was everybody like all of the gangs had their own, and it's going to kill me, and we're probably going to get letters because my brain doesn't want to work right now. But
yeah, and I count on you for these things.
I know you do. But they tried to shoehorn in like 2 or 3 different storylines into one 2-3 hour movie that ends up being a 3 hour movie, and it's just too much. So why they keep doing that is beyond me. The same thing they did in the last movie.
No, it's Batman Beyond Me.
Batman Beyond Me. It's the last one we're going to talk about, and that's the upcoming or the Batman v Superman movie that came out, and then the upcoming Justice League. Batman's, all of those. Now, all I want to say about that, and I want to be real clear about this, right? I want to be real on point. Ben Affleck as Batman, dude is yoked. Dude went to the Steel Church and gave and really sat outside with the months of swole and got all ripped up. Like Alex Ross, if you've ever seen an Alex Ross version of Batman, like that's the kind of Batman he is. Just big, just meaty and thick and rich like Ovaltine. Just straight up, like you put him in sausage. Like if you made, you could use him to make a roux. That's how.
You hand him a suckling pig, and he just gnaws on it and exudes sausages.
Listen, if you have celiac disease, stay away from Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne. He is thick. He's going to thicken it up. That's all I'm saying. Like, that's the one thing I really like about these movies is that I really believe that Affleck is one hell of a Batman. Like, yeah. I stand by that. I stand by him. The writing sucks. It's too dark. But him as Batman in that first scene where the cops come into the room and he's up in the corner, like, hanging from the ceiling. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'm good with this Batman. Like, this is the Batman that I wanted for a while. Since Keaton, as far as the portrayal of Batman as a badass, this is it. Good.
But also, you know, speaking of the Batmans that came before, the one thing Batman v Superman does brilliantly and also very subtly, because I've talked to people who are like, holy, I didn't notice that. I didn't make that connection. I didn't see that. And their minds are blown, is the nods to every Superman and Batman that came before.
Right. Right.
By way of example, why does Lois need to, collect the super spear, the kryptonite spear scene? Why does that happen in a partially submerged ruin? Because it is a brilliant, subtle nod to Donner's Superman.
Yes, yes, yes. You're right. You're right.
Visually, it's a retooling of that, and there are so many nods to every Superman and every Batman incarnation that came before. Some of them awkwardly. It's probably not intentional, but there's a bit of a flavor of the Axis chemical assault when you get at least a glimpse of the aftermath of Batman going after Luther's kryptonite.
Okay. Yeah, I know what you mean.
But this is also what Zack Snyder does all the time. I won't use the word best because it's bad, bad. in his attempt to visually and
sorry, still laughing at that. You're chastising Zack Snyder. Bad.
I got a rolled up newspaper.
Bad. I'm gonna rub your nose in this.
That's right. I've got a Burton Batman script I rolled up, and I'm popping him on the nose with it. But it's the fact that that aftermath suggests a murderous rampage.
Right.
The wholesale slaughter of, is it LexCorp or LuthorCorp in that movie? I don't recall.
I think it's
which.
LexCorp. I think it's LexCorp, yeah.
The abject slaughter of LexCorp employees to achieve the end of basically grand theft. I can't give the murderous, the scarring, you know, the permanently disfiguring.
Yeah.
This too far gone Batman, I can't give him a seat at the round table of the Justice League.
But so here's, I think that it's pretty interesting what.
I don't care what his mother's name was.
I think it's pretty interesting in retrospect. When I think about it now, Batman was always the moral compass, in a weird way, of the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
He was the humanizing effect.
Exactly.
Now what we're seeing, though, is the rest – I think what we're seeing is the rest of the Justice League, because we're seeing – it's weird. They made Batman the oldest or the older of the Justice League members.
Yeah.
So now you have this Batman the supposition is that this Batman has been around for a while, to the point where the main reference points to Batman v Superman were Batman Dark Knight Returns, where he had retired and come out of retirement to murder people. Because Frank Miller, to murder people. Let's just be honest. To commit the Purge style murders on people. But now we have to rein him back. Now in the next couple, movies, iterations, we have to bring him back, which is what the Justice League is going to do for him, which is the flip of what he usually does for the Justice League,
yeah.
Which is, okay.
And I can understand that, but it becomes an unworkable Batman.
I don't know.
Even Gotham can't forgive.
I don't know if it's unworkable. I really don't. I really like.
I just have this thing about Schneider. It just.
I know you do.
I mean, I'm.
Oh,
just,
it's gonna suck.
The alley scene, and oh yeah.
It's gonna. Don't worry. It's gonna suck. It's, ever since the alley scene.
Well, yeah, it's the alley scene in Watchmen. Yeah, it just Schneider cannot.
I thought you were talking about
just,
the
just rapes heroism, basically.
I thought it was you were going to talk about the alley scene at the beginning of Batman v Superman, where you had 300 style slow motion gun getting caught.
This is Gotham.
Where you get the pearls and the gun, the physics.
We talked at length, didn't we?
On the
show about how, I'm not really sure how that all works. And as Catherine is always keen to point out, from Frank Miller's Batman Begins straight through to any other incarnation thereof, apparently Martha was wearing the cheap jewelry that night. Real pearls aren't strung in that way.
They're strung pearl by pearl, right?
That's the way you do that with good pearls. That's why they're so damned expensive. Well, that pearls. Yeah, you don't get that fall apart. So Frank Miller clearly knew nothing about, 1%er problems.
Well, it's not as good. It's not as good an effect either.
Yeah, it's not a great visual when it just sort of snakes down.
I want to ask Neil deGrasse Tyson, what's the percentage chance of the physics of your hammer of your gun getting caught around a string of pearls that you're trying to rob from someone? You've just ruined your payday by destroying the string of pearls. You've also created,
because then you have to go and have it repaired before you hawk it. So that's twice you're just putting yourself under scrutiny.
Well, you've got an hour in the street just collecting pearls.
Oh yeah.
Just like a weird David
and at that point, some of them are covered in blood and gore and bits of brain. It's like all of a sudden you're like Jules Winfield in the back seat. Superfly TNT, the guns of the Navarone.
With Phil Lamar's brain spread out all over the back of your sedan.
Well, I just shot in the face.
We should probably wrap this up, Cole. Thank you.
Really well. Did you say Marvin? No, Martha.
Thank you for giving me a hell of a birthday episode.
You're very welcome. And
letting me talk about Michael Keaton's Black Turtleneck some more. Anytime.
I just wish I could give you Michael Keaton in a Black Turtleneck, or let you be what you were born to be, and that is Keaton's Black Turtleneck.
I would really like a signed autograph Michael Keaton in a Black Turtleneck picture. That would be great. I would love that. I also found, and I think I put it in the show notes, I don't know why it didn't open for me, but I did find a website discussing at length the Black Turtleneck from that movie.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah, there it is. The website's called AskAndyAboutClothes.com. And I will send this, I will post this to you so that you can post this link to the show notes, if you would, sir, because I did find this was the first thing I started looking for. Also wanted to spend a super, we don't do this as often as we should, but I want to send a super giant shout out and thank you to Batman Online. This website is batman-online.com. They did all of this research in movie by movie, taking stills from the movies.
We need to link that one as well.
And comparing those to panels from the comics, and it's very good.
It's dynamite.
They did a good job. So thank you guys for that. Give them some props and some hits on their website.
Good job, guys. Get the opposite of the Zack Snyder effect.
That's right. That's good. Who's a good boy? Damn it. We're the worst. All right. Why don't you plug us up and we'll get out of here.
Right.
First of all,
I do have one question before we go.
Yes.
Is your mother's middle name Sue? No. God, I hate you.
God, I hate you. Now you have to die.
That's right. You were that close to living, but... It has to be an exact match. I'm a bit of a pedant that way. That's my new, that's actually a character from the Muggerville 7.
Nice.
Pantsman? No, Pedant.
Oh,
Pedantman.
Okay. Pedantman.
Pedantman.
Pedantman. Pedantman.
So with that, we are coming to you, of course, from the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at JediColeUniverse@gmail.com.
You really had to force that one out? Like, you were thinking real hard about what
I couldn't remember if I put the at the beginning, but I'm pretty sure I didn't. And you can check myself out. You can check me out over at DallasOnAir.com on the first and third Sundays of every month with the Rancor Pit live at our new time, 10:30 to 11:30. And on the 20th of August, the premiere of Isle of Toys.
Nice.
On DallasOnAir.com, 9:30 to 10:30, followed immediately by the Rancor Pit on most of these Jedi Cole stations.
That's so awesome.
As you're listening to this, as this drops on Friday, I will be at Infinicon 2017, second year for Infinicon, over at the Crown Plaza on Midway Road in Addison, Texas, Infinicon.net. You really owe it to yourself, especially if you've been to AllCon.
Get over there.
This is like AllCon in the early days because it's growing little by little. It's amazing. I'm producing some game shows, of course. Screen Time is back. Catherine's doing Name That Tune. We've got Toy Tunes from Eddie Medina. We've got a new show called Channel Surfers from this wonderful couple, Craig and Courtney.
Woo, Craig and Courtney.
Yeah, Sean Padilla is taking over the reins of Saturday Night Special, the action film genre game show. And, of course, the Rancor Pit, final stop on the Rancor Pit.
Oh, my God, it's over.
Summer Rancor Pit Roadshow Summer Invasion Tour, our seventh and final stop on the tour. It's been an amazing, amazing summer. We're going to talk about 40 years of Star Wars, the big 4-0, not unlike our
Henry
Farmer. And I'm spent. But will there also be two game shows? Do you like the Star Wars? And, of course, the Rancor Pit Galactic Games 6 will be held at Infinicon. The Rancor Pit, the Jedi Cole Universe, is producing the costume pageant.
Nice.
An official part of the Jedi Cole Universe. And I believe Eddie and I will be opening the proceedings on Friday morning. So, I need to get my ass in gear because I still have a lot of work to do.
Isn't that always the way? Oh, my God. Thank you, guys, for giving me a happy birthday, for continuing to listen, for being involved. Check us out on our various Instagrams and Twitters. We're out there. All the shows, I think, at this point have them. Cole, I do need to have a very serious discussion with you about the use of hashtags and the fact that you're not using them, so nobody knows where to find us. We'll take that off air. You guys are awesome. Join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics. And seriously, if you listen to this, just get in your car and drive your ass to Infinicon. You will not be disappointed. I promise you that.
We will entertain you all day long, every day.
I'm greatly jealous of everybody who gets to go experience this. I miss being able to do these things, and looking forward to all the great stories and posts and pictures from Infinicon this year. So with all that being said, buy, collect, and enjoy your comic books, and get some force meal. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, Martha.
Good night, John Boy. What if Batman was in Little House? That might be the best middle image.
Well, that would be like all the lights are going out, and then you see him, like, this window opens, and he sort of glides out on his bat wings.
Good night, Paul. Good night, Batman. Why do you want to kill me? What? No!
I just want to be a writer.
A writer. You want to write about killing me, don't you?
You want to write about it. Where's Martha? There's no Martha in this house. We keep telling you that. Get some sleep.
Thinking of the Ingalls.
You're thinking of the Ingalls. All right. Good night, everybody.